Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin and go to the Occupy Wall Street demonstrations in New York's Zuccotti Park and speak with the author of a new book, Republic Lost, How Money Corrupts Congress and a Plan to Stop It. Lawrence Lessig, the director of the Edmund J. Safra Foundation Center for Ethics at Harvard University, where he's also a professor of law at Harvard Law School, joins us from the demonstrations to discuss whether, as he hopes, the movement will spread to occupy K Street, the lair of the lobbyists in our nation's capital, and Main Street. Then we will look into how unions and other progressive organizations are joining in with this spontaneous and grassroots protest movement, Occupy Wall Street. Les Leopold, a strategic consultant to the Blue-Green Alliance, which brings together trade unions and environmental organizations, joins us to discuss whether an authentic, non-hierarchical populist movement is forming to counter the repackaging of America's right wing as the Tea Party, a largely astroturf movement guided by political pros Karl Rove and Dick Armey and funded by the Koch brothers. Then finally, we will talk with a Syrian human rights activist about the Russian and Chinese veto in the United Nations Security Council of tougher sanctions against the murderous Assad regime. Radwan Zihadeh, the founder and director of the Damascus Center for Human Rights Studies, joins us to discuss the likelihood of the Syrian opposition taking up arms and fighting back against the regime from sanctuaries in Iraq and Turkey. And just in terms of breaking news, there is the unfortunate news that co-founder of Apple, Steve Jobs, died a short time ago at the age of 57. And on a somewhat ridiculous note, Sarah Palin just announced that she is not running for president, that she and her husband Todd will devote ourselves to God, family, and country. Let's now go to Zuccotti Park. Joining us now is Lawrence Lessig, the director of the Edmund J. Safra Foundation Center for Ethics at Harvard University and a professor of law at Harvard Law School. Previously, Lawrence Lessig was a professor of law at Stanford Law School and the University of Chicago Law School. He clerked for Judge Richard Posner on the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals and Justice Antonin Scalia on the United States Supreme Court. He is the author of a new book, Republic Lost, How Money Corrupts Congress and a Plan to Stop It. He joins us now from the Occupy Wall Street demonstrations in Zuccotti Park. Thank you so much for joining us, Professor Lessig.
Glad to be here.
And give us a flavor. I don't mean to recruit you as our reporter, but that's essentially what we're doing.
Yeah, so the park is just about full now. It's packed mainly with, you know, 20-somethings or 30-somethings, but there's a whole bunch of suits who are walking through, a whole bunch of great handmade posters as well as some printed posters, and a lot of people just building a camp. So in the center, there's a line that separates places where people are sleeping. There's a kind of food co-op that's been set up. The Root Strikers group just brought in about a couple thousand bottles of water for people to drink. So it's really beginning to take off as a rally, and it's a beautiful, amazingly beautiful New York day for it. So I'm sure it's going to have a lot of people here when the rally takes off.
And do you believe that this is the beginning of we've already seen a populist movement get a lot of attention in this country, the Tea Party, largely propelled by outrage over Wall Street. However, it's been seems to have been co-opted, at least guided by political pros like Karl Rove and Dick Armey, who managed to get a lot of congressmen elected and take over the Congress. And also there's been funding from the oligarchs like the Koch brothers. Could it be now that a real, authentic populist movement is emerging in the United States?
I think there's a potential for that. I think a lot depends upon how people here allow their story to be told. This is much more important than what happened in Madison. Because in Madison, the only way to understand that fight was a fight between Republicans and Democrats. And I was clearly on the side of the Democrats, and I clearly loved what was happening. But it wasn't a fight that was going to unite anybody in a way that was going to change anything substantial. But the fight here, focused on Wall Street, should be a fight about the corruption in the political system, the way in which money from Wall Street basically bought the regulatory environment that brought the collapse of 2008. And worse than that, after 2008, the money from Wall Street blocked any effective reform. The first time in American history when, after a financial disaster, we didn't see any substantial financial reform. And so people on the left and people on the right should be able to rally behind that idea and that kind of populism, which says that, you know, we shouldn't have a government that's run for the elites or by the elites. And if this community here allows that to be the message that explains why this protest is so important, and as I wrote in a piece for Huffington Post today, we imagine Occupy Wall Street, moving to Occupy K Street, and then moving to Occupy Main Street, so that we don't have to alienate anybody to build them into this movement. And I do think there's an enormous potential for this to be the beginnings of a real populist change that could change the way American government works.
Well, it seems already framing this around a simple message that it's the 99% versus the 1% seems to be that should have resonance. And I wonder, do you believe that this country is based upon a kind of sense of fair play and fairness, or are we such in the thrall of the billionaires that we're all thinking that we're going to win the lottery and it's okay? I mean, I don't know where the moral center is anymore, but I would think...
So I think that the danger to the 99% rhetoric is that it gets too easily cast by the right as class warfare. And... you know, I'd be happy to have class warfare, but I don't think it's actually productive. I think that the way to understand the 99% is that the 1% has corrupted the system to protect themselves. And that is a true story, and it's a true fair complaint, and it really is about the fairness inside of democracy of allowing the 1% to use their enormous wealth to buy the political system in a way that protects exactly their interests and hurts the interests of everybody else. So if it's understood in that way, yeah, I think it's fine, and it's important, and its potential to rally people is huge. But my fear is that unless we get people to recognize the need to build this cross-partisan movement, the movement fails. Now, by cross-partisan, I don't mean moderates. I don't mean, you know, people on the left and people on the right have to learn to agree. It's more like, you know, we have to agree on the rules of the game, and nobody on the left or the right should look at this game and say that these rules are fair. So let's get fair rules, then let's play the political game and fight as hard as we can for whatever side we have.
Well, Lawrence Lessig, clearly there have been people like George Lakoff who've pointed out for some time that the right in this country is much better at framing things and in messaging. So if the 99% versus the 1% is not the right message, then surely then the right message is that our politics are about money and not about people. And if you make politics about money, then people with money own your politics. So let's make politics in this country not about money.
I agree. I think that's the right framing. And if it's framed in that way, emphasizing the corruption of this system, then I think neither side should oppose it. And when we've done polling of people on the right about this money issue, people on the right are just as furious about the kind of crony capitalism or corruption of the system as people on the left. So I think keeping it framed in that way helps people understand why this is so important.
But surely people feel powerless, Lawrence Lessig, given the Supreme Court decision that opened the floodgates for unlimited money. Now, they did open the floodgates for both corporations and unions, but there's no symmetry there between corporations and unions. So, and you've clerked for Antonin Scalia, who's on the Supreme Court, obviously. So you have a sense of that court. They did leave open the possibility for some kind of transparency about who gives money. But we know that the Congress tried to enact the Disclose Act, and that was shut down by the Republicans. So they know, clearly the Republicans know the benefits of unlimited corporate money. So how do you level that playing field?
Yeah, so it's absolutely right. The Supreme Court's made the problem worse. And transparency would be a good thing to have. But I actually think the Supreme Court decision's a distraction. And I don't think transparency solves any problem at all. If we had perfect transparency, people would be able to prove what we already know, that the system's corrupt. And if we reverse the Supreme Court decision, and went back to the way the world was before the Supreme Court decision, hey, the democracy was already broken the day before the Supreme Court decided Citizens United. So I think what we got to do is to focus reform in a way that could actually have an effect. And that means to support and find a way to leverage small-dollar funded elections into our system so that politicians are not dependent upon a small, tiny subset of America to fund their elections. They have to look to all of us. And small-dollar funded elections would dramatically change the way in which this Congress did its work. So I think that's the fundamental reform we have to find a way to push for and stop, you know, thinking that the Supreme Court is the only place where we get effective reform activity. We get effective reform activity by the old-fashioned way, by getting politicians to listen to what we demand.
Well, speaking of the old-fashioned way, Lawrence Lessig, I recall that Wisconsin Senator Proxmire, who was famous for the Golden Fleece Awards, he would only spend $500 on a Senate campaign, and he was continually reelected. So where's that magic? I mean, can you bottle that magic? Can we go back in time to that America?
No, we can't. We're not going to. People who want to run Proxmire's campaign lose. There are people who run that campaign. They're not taken seriously. But the most interesting Republican candidate for president is Buddy Romer, former governor from Louisiana, eight years in the United States House of Representatives. Buddy Romer is running a campaign where he says he's going to take no more than $100 from anybody, take no money from any PAC. And I disagree with just about every substantive issue he has, but obviously he thinks that the most important issue is the same issue I think is the most important, the corruption of the system. Yet people won't even listen to him because they're like, yeah, there's no way you can run a presidential campaign on $100 contributions. So, you know, the reality of this world is that we can't run or win elections without money in the political system, so we have to find a way to fund political systems that doesn't turn control over to the smallest and most elite members in the society. And that's why, you know, in my book, I talk about what I call a Grant and Franklin project that includes vouchers that would, you know, be vouchers for everybody, and that would make it possible to fund elections and small-dollar contributions. There are lots of suggestions like that out there. We just need to get people to focus on the core, the root problem here, which is the money in the system, and then find a way to strike at that root. You know, Henry David Thoreau, there are 1,000 hacking at the branches of evil to one striking at the root. And what I'm trying to do is see whether we can get all these people around here hacking at branches of evil to recognize what the core problem here, what the root is.
Well, tell us a little bit about your book, Lawrence Lessig. I know you're there at Zuccotti Park, you're in a way you're seeing the expression of much of what you're trying to write about here in terms of political reform. At least there's the beginnings of perhaps a new vehicle to change the political landscape. But we're going to be talking in a couple of weeks when you come out here, and we'll obviously talk more at length. But just give our audience a little flavor of the book.
Yeah. So the book is called Republic Lost, and its basic argument is that, you know, people have a conception of corruption, which is like Rob Blagojevich or Randy Duke Cunningham, people like committing crimes by bribing politicians or politicians taking bribes. And that's not our democracy. That's not the problem we face. The problem we face is much more pervasive, much more obvious, in plain sight kind of corruption. And that's the way we fund campaigns and the way lobbyists use that system to leverage enormous power for their clients. And that reality produces enormous cynicism inside of our system. So 75% of people think money buys results in Congress, and that leads most people to say, why should I waste my time? And until we change that fundamental economy of influence, we're not going to get any progress either on the left or the right. I mean, I think this is the most important argument I'm trying to make in the book, that this is not a left-right issue. People on the left have obvious things that they want to get that are being blocked by special interest money. But people on the right, too. If you want smaller government, you're not going to have smaller government as long as a large government makes it easier to raise money, because large government means there are more chains for congressmen to pull every time they want to raise money. Or a simpler tax system, we have a complex tax system because that means there's a million people to call every time there's election just to raise money to keep whatever special tax benefit has gone into the system. So people on the left and the right have to recognize this way of funding elections is defeating their objectives. And if we could get a different way of funding elections, then we could begin to talk about how a democracy could work. So then I end by like mapping what that different system would be, but recognizing that this is an enormously difficult problem to solve because everybody inside the Beltway in Washington depends on this system surviving. And if we're going to change the system, we, you know, have to adopt strategies that are not inside the Beltway strategies. So I actually advanced to the end an argument in favor of a constitutional convention that is a system that the framers envisioned that Congress couldn't control as a way to build the reform that we need to get a change in the way Congress functions. So that's the basic argument of the book, but it's trying to lay out this plan for reform and finally quash, you know, the ridiculous skepticism that's out there about whether, in fact, we can say that our system's corrupt. Our system is corrupt. It's not the system our framers gave us. When the framers talked about Congress, they said it would be an institution, quote, dependent upon the people alone. And it's obviously clear that this system is not dependent upon the people alone. It's dependent upon the funders of elections. And those funders are obviously defending policy in a way that's corrupting the opportunity for democracy to function.
So, Lawrence Lessig, if this is a battle between the power of money and the power of people and the power of votes, and money has transcended the power of people, and I guess you're witnessing the at least a kind of nascent and inchoate movement of people coalescing down there where we're speaking to you now from the Occupy Wall Street demonstrations in Zuccotti Park next to Wall Street. Clearly, when you mentioned a minute ago the Beltway, it's more than just money. It's about connections. Yesterday, I did an interview with Friends of the Earth who uncovered through the Freedom of Information Act emails between a chief lobbyist for a Canadian oil pipeline that would go from the tar sands of Alberta across the United States to refineries in Texas. This fellow was the former deputy campaign manager for Hillary Clinton in her 2008 campaign, and now he's the chief lobbyist for the Canadians. So it's not just that the powerful in this country have gamed the system, because the relationship is so cozy that the State Department is not even exercising any oversight on the part of the people. They're telling these this oil company how to get, you know, get the permits and get it done, as opposed to you know, I mean, I wonder whether my reservoir for outrages has been tapped, but I must say this really got under my skin.
Yeah, you're right. It's about connections, but it's about connections that facilitate a certain kind of wealth or a certain kind of money. I think it's important to say this is not against money in the sense that people who should be in this movement are people who should hate, you know, the free market system or should hate capitalism. I mean, there are those people, a lot of them right here, who are arguing against capitalism as the problem. But the point isn't money. The point is corrupt money. The point is the way corrupt money corrupts capitalism and corrupts democracy. So, you know, when you've got companies out in Silicon Valley that, when I was out in San Francisco, who's starting a great new idea, they have some great idea that they want to take out to the marketplace, they don't spend their time in Washington lobbying because they just want to make something effective and make it work and make a lot of money from it. There's no problem with that. The problem is when that money gets channeled into the system so that you buy political advantage against your competitor, and that's what makes you rich. And so the insiders that have this influence game have produced what, you know, to Jim Cooper, a Democrat from Tennessee, says Capitol Hill has become this farm league for K Street. You know, basically everybody, members of Congress, lobbyists, bureaucrats.
Right in the middle of the demonstration, right?
So, you know, everybody, lobbyists, bureaucrats, staffers, they all want to live life in government so they can go and live life as a lobbyist, and live life as a lobbyist because there's an enormous amount of money in that. And the money they get from that is wealthy because the system is able to deliver to the clients of the lobbyists what the clients pay for. So that's the corruption of the system. Money doesn't in its nature make it corrupt. It's just that we've allowed the system to be responsive to this kind of distortion from money, and that's the corruption that we ought to be fighting. So you could be free market libertarian and be as much upset about this corruption as somebody on the far left. And in fact, I had my favorite moment on the radio was when I was debating Richard Epstein, who is a famous right-wing libertarian economist lawyer from University of Chicago. And in the end, we agreed public funding of elections was the only way to end the corruption of the system, because he is as concerned with the way government corrupts the market as I'm concerned about the way that government doesn't help people who need to be helped in the right way. So that's the point. It's not about, you know, going to destroy the system. It's going to destroy the corruption, which is destroying the system.
And indeed, translating public service into private gain seems to be totally acceptable, and it clearly should not be acceptable. I thank you so much for joining us here today from the demonstrations of the Occupy Wall Street demonstrations at Anzacotti Park, Lawrence Lessig, and for your new book, Republic Lost. And I look forward to talking with you more about it when you come to Los Angeles in a couple of weeks.
Great. It'll be a lot of fun. Thanks a lot.
Thanks a lot. And again, I've been speaking with Lawrence Lessig, who's the director of the Edmund J. Safra Foundation Center for Ethics at Harvard University and a professor of law at Harvard Law School. Previously, he was a professor of law at Stanford Law School and at the University of Chicago Law School. He clerked for Judge Richard Posner on the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals and Justice Antonin Scalia on the United States Supreme Court. He is the author of a new book, Republic Lost, How Money Corrupts Congress and a Plan to Stop It. He joined us from the Occupy Wall Street demonstrations in Zuccotti Park. And we're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back talking about how unions and other progressive organizations are joining the Occupy Wall Street protest movement.
They want you lost in your own fear. No compass, find your way out. A troglodyte, a derelict barn. Pretend the filthy rich.